Good morning. Hope you'll find a seat, please. We're going to try to get started in a few minutes. Should be just a couple of minutes. Well, good morning. Thank you very much. I'm Wayne Lord, President of the World Affairs Council of Atlanta, and I give you a very warm welcome to the Atlanta Summit, Sustaining America's Leadership in Global Health and Water. This program is organized by the World Affairs Council of Atlanta, CARE, and the Center for Strategic and International Studies based in Washington. It's been a great collaboration for these organizations to work together. You'll hear more about collaborations later, but it is a very special honor. We have a number of VIPs and very special guests who will be introduced in just a moment by Helene Gayle and Steve Morrison. Let me say something quickly about the genesis of this summit. How did the World Affairs Council of Atlanta, organizations at less than 2 years old, a nonprofit membership organization dedicated to world affairs, come to partner with CARE and CSIS? As we were forming our council 2 years ago, I spoke with Senator Isaacson. He said that he would be willing to support a program with us, but it should be on the subject of global health. And to the extent possible, as we started the planning really 2 years ago, that it have some focus on Africa, where he has very special interest and responsibility in the United States Senate. This was, of course, also a great interest to Helene Gayle, who is not only on the board of World Affairs Council of Atlanta and the board of CSIS in Washington, but is one of the great leaders of global health in the world. And so together, we came together, and that's how we began to partner with these two organizations. We knew CIS through other partnerships and programs that we had done before, and we also were committed to do a program on global health and water. So here we are. I want to thank Helene and Steve and their amazing staffs and the staff of the World Affairs Council of Atlanta. The list could be very long, how many folks it's taken to put on this program, culminating in this event, which is beyond our biggest expectations. The success of this collaboration is based primarily on the unparalleled passion for global health that Dr. Gayle and Dr. Morrison have. For this conference and for their lifetime of service, we owe them a great vote of thanks. The huge response of the American community to this subject is clearly evident today and is indicative of the importance of the subject of global health and of water to so many people and organizations in Atlanta over the past decades. It is a resounding tribute also to the legacy and generosity of Mr. Robert Woodruff, the longtime chairman of the Coca-Cola Company, and the person who founded the Woodruff set of foundations in building this robust cluster of world-class institutions in this city and state that focus on global health and water. And we are grateful for that legacy. It is now a great pleasure for me to introduce for welcoming remarks this morning, Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle. But I think we want to, Steve, did you want to say before we have to go? Helene. We would like to have opening remarks first before this Lieutenant Governor. Helene Gayle wants to say a few words, and then Steve Morrison, and then I will introduce the Lieutenant Governor. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Wayne, and thanks so much for getting us started and for welcoming everybody. As I look around the audience and see so many of you, many who I have worked with over the years and many whose organizations are doing great work in this space, and students and others who are here to learn, to share, and to really continue to build our legacy in these areas of global health and water. So I'm just so pleased to have so many of you here today. CARE is really delighted to be a partner with CSIS and the World Affairs Council for this summit. And as Wayne said, this came together in a variety of different ways. But I think we have the three organizations just been pleased about the degree of partnership and complementarity that we brought to this effort. We also want to thank all the other cooperating organizations for their support and their contribution to this, but also to the broader field of global health. And the other organizations, lots to mention. I don't want to leave out anybody, but they are listed in the back of your program. So you see this is truly a collaboration that goes beyond our three organizations. Now, CARE is an organization that focuses on eliminating extreme poverty and really helping to focus on developing communities around the world. See, global health is really a cornerstone of our work. I've always worked most of my life for health organizations and seen health from that lens, but now being at a development organization and recognizing the important link between poverty and health and the importance of health as a cornerstone of economic development. I think Tom Friedman said it last night that healthy people make healthy economies. So for us as an organization that is focused on developing communities, health is such an important part of the work we do. And we're particularly excited for today's summit that highlights the link between health, safe water, sanitation, and hygiene. Oftentimes, water and hygiene are forgotten as truly fundamental to health and global health. And I see Jean Gangarosa here from the Emory Center, who was one of my mentors when I was at CDC, who was one of those people, and there are many in this room, who have for a long time recognized how important water is. And in fact, our very public health roots, and we talked about this a little bit last night at a dinner, really came from this whole notion of how just fundamental access to clean and safe water and hygiene are to the areas of global health. And we'll talk more about some of those particular links to malnutrition, to child health, to some of the biggest killers of children around the world. So these, we just feel like it was an important and wonderful time to make these ties and really talk about these issues that are key to global health, but also very fundamental to the partners in Atlanta who you'll hear from. I wanted to, as Wayne said, recognize some distinguished visitors who we have. And I think the First Lady of Niger is not here yet, but she and her team, her delegation, will be joining us. I also want to recognize, and we will hear from briefly after Mr. Cagle makes his remarks, the Vice President of Kenya and Minister of Home Affairs, the Honorable Stephen Kolanzo Muziaka, who is here with us, and we're very pleased to have the Vice President Muziaka here with us. And also want to recognize his ambassador of Kenya to the United States, His Excellency Elkanah Odembo, who is a longtime friend of Atlanta. And He was here a couple of weeks ago with his prime minister. He's now back with his vice president. He just keeps making sure that those links between Kenya and Atlanta stay strong. So I think I am going to end with my remarks and just again say how happy we are to have the culmination of what has been several months of work that has helped to really strengthen the partnerships among the Atlanta institutions who are working on this, and really look forward to a day where we really do talk about how can we make sure as the United States that we continue this legacy of leadership in global health. I think it's important for us as the American people, because it matters to the work that we do here for our own health, but it also matters in terms of who we are as a people. And I think global health has been one of those areas that has brought us together, shown our leadership, shown our generosity in a language that I think all people understand, and it's been helpful to us, but it's also been helpful as we think about how we are really contributing to making this a better world. It's truly one of those areas that I think has mutual benefits in ways that are long-lasting. So I, again, thank all of you for being here. I think we are going to have a wonderful day. We look forward to your participation, and I think I will turn it back over to either Wayne or Steve to continue. So thank you.
It's a real privilege for me to introduce the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Georgia. I've known Lieutenant Governor Cagle for many years during my career in agribusiness. Even on the toughest of the issues that we face together, his commitment to doing what he deeply believes is best for our state has always been his primary focus. You can read many of the details of his biography in the program. But I think it's important to note that in 2006, after a successful career in real estate and banking, having served in the Georgia State Senate, Casey Cagle made history in our state by becoming the first Republican ever elected to the second highest office in Georgia. But in his time in the Senate and then as a lieutenant governor, he has advocated creative partnerships between the private sector, government, educational institutions, and the nonprofit sector. His policy interests range from healthcare to education to small business. And he's one of our state leaders that is at the forefront of bringing innovation and new ideas in the way we think about economic development and the future of the state. To present welcoming remarks on behalf of the state of Georgia, I'm honored to present Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle.
Appreciate that very much. Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much. And thank you, Wayne, for that great introduction and all the great work in which you are providing not only on our state, but also in a national and a worldwide platform as well. I want to extend my welcome to each of you for being part of this very historic summit. I also want to express my appreciation to Dr. Gale, along with Dr. Marson, for being a part of this. The idea of CARE and CSIS being able to be a part of this and be here in Atlanta really is a special treat for all of us. Also having Senator Johnny Isaacson present with you. Some of you in the room may know him. Many of you may, this may be your first opportunity to get to know him. But I will tell you, I have known him for a long, long time. He's been an individual that has provided great, great leadership. He's been a phenomenal mentor to me. When I came into the state Senate back in 1994, I had the privilege of meeting then Senator Johnny Isaacson, who was a state senator at the time. And was one of those individuals that really taught me the ropes, as we like to say here in the South, and I will always be indebted. One of the things that I think is very, very unique and special about our great state, we like to say that we're the capital of the South, and we've had enormous prosperity, and we've had great leadership opportunities throughout our great state. We are one of the fastest growing states in the nation, about 10 million people strong within our state. And we have things like the fastest growing port in the nation, the busiest airport in the nation as well. And we've got great research institutions, many of those in which you've had the great privilege of having the opportunity to visit with and know. We're very proud of those institutions. We're proud of the research alliance that goes on and the ability to take the academia world and research and incubate that into the next type of economy that we're going to be looking at. You know, I believe that this summit is a very timely summit in the sense that in order to have the prosperous economy that all of us want to see, we have to certainly have sustainable water supply, but also not just as it relates to the quantity, but also the quality of water as well. But when we think of public health and how critical that is, it is a direct relation to the ability for workers to be productive and to be successful and ultimately to experience the American dream. That's what America is all about. And when we take that and broaden our horizon and look to the world marketplace to see how we can use the collaborative effort that all of you bring to the table really gives me great reason for optimism and excitement. None of this obviously would be possible without great sponsors, people like the Coca-Cola Company, who has meant so much to this great state, but I would say also to the entire world. UPS, another great corporate citizen within our state as well, that steps up to the plate. And when we think about tackling big issues, issues of great magnitude, we have to have not only the for-profit but the not-for-profit arm working hand-in-hand to make major policy changes and initiatives to become a reality, to make all of our lives in a worldwide stage much better. So I applaud all of you for your commitment, for your effort, and it is a great honor for me to welcome you to our great city here in Atlanta, to our great state in Georgia as well. And I believe that you will not only find it to be very delightful, but hopefully the summit will bring a lot of information that will help us solve some of the worldwide crisis within our country. Thank you very, very much, and a great welcome.
Now, it's my great pleasure and honor to introduce the Vice President of Kenya. Vice President Musyoka served for 27 years in Parliament. He's been the Minister of Foreign Affairs, of Tourism, of Education. He comes with a real deep interest and passion in these issues that are related to improving the social and economic well-being of the people of Kenya. And so it's definitely our pleasure and honor that he was able to be with us and bring a few words of greeting and some of his own thoughts about these issues. So without further ado, Vice President Musyoka.
Well, thank you, Dr. Gale. What a wonderful morning in this historic city of Atlanta. This is only but my second visit to the state as well. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to greet you very briefly this morning and to bring you Kenyan greetings. Out there, we greet each other differently. When we begin to greet, we never stop. We just continue. But let me appreciate this moment and really thank CARE International. When I first heard of the word CARE, I looked at it and I thought, yeah, CARE. Little did I know that it actually meant Center for American Relief Everywhere. And you have lived that dream. Is it part of the American dream? You have meant a lot and been able to touch and reach the hearts of so many people in Africa. And in my own country, Kenya, I can tell you that we appreciate greatly the work that has been undertaken in what I believe is the world's largest refugee camp in Kenya, a camp by the name Dadaab, just at the border between Kenya and Somalia. And I think all of us today do appreciate the significance of work that is being undertaken jointly by the African Union and countries of the world in trying to stabilize Somalia. But CARE has been there, working every moment with families that have crossed from war-torn Somalia into Kenya. And I can tell you that the population in Dadaab is about 600,000, making it the third largest concentration of people anywhere in my country. And as I said, the world's largest refugee camp. And CARE has been there to give water and to give hope to these refugees. Therefore, I want to, on behalf of all of us in the East African region, to really thank you, because you have meant everything and truly been able to be worthy partners with us in the region. Let me also acknowledge and applaud Senator Johnny Isaacson for being here and for his enormous interest and work in Kenya and in the East African region. Recently, I think you transited through Nairobi to Uganda. And you know Uganda is one of our sisterly states in the East African community. We are trying to do the best we can to lift the quality of lives of East Africans. And God has been able to be gracious to us because we have struck oil, not just in Uganda, but in Kenya more recently. And I know that your tremendous interest in trying to work for the good of humanity everywhere has actually stood out in our region. It's so good to see you. I think this is your home state as well. It's wonderful to see you. More importantly, as I said, I do recognize the work of CARE International for the successful work they've been able to do in my country for over 40 years now on charitable relief as well as development activities and in partnership with the Kenyan government. In so doing, you have helped serve millions of Kenyans in provision of health care, water and sanitation, among other areas. Today, about $500 million has been invested towards this end. And this year alone, CARE has committed over $35 million to Kenya. We applaud this partnership, as it does go a long way in enhancing Kenya's efforts to achieve our Millennium Development Goals. I can tell you that along with other African states, we met in Maputo in 2003 and decided that all of the African governments were going to up the ante, literally to make sure that they provide at least 10% of GDP resources to provision of water and healthcare. And therefore, we are committed to achieving our commitment with regard to Millennium Development Goals. As you may be aware, Kenya hosts the largest refugee camp again in the world, and we would want to appreciate the tremendous partnership we have realized. While without relenting, CARE has committed to support the government in building drought resilience in parts of our country that are semi-arid, promoting as well a disaster risk reduction, deepening microfinance services to the poor, and we have actually committed ourselves to the fight against poverty. This is one of Africa's largest challenges, compounded, as it were, by incidences of bad governance across the African continent. And some of us have chosen to fight against this scourge of bad governance as well. Consequently, in Kenya, and under our new constitution, which was promulgated in August 2010, the right for every Kenyan to health care and water, clean drinking water, is actually guaranteed. And as a result, our reforms are being undertaken in the healthcare sector to be able to achieve this vision. Obviously, we do meet up with challenges, but we are determined to be able to overcome. We have many lessons to learn from Atlanta, and we'll be very keen to partner with the organizations involved in this summit and to be able to be part of what I'm told is going to be the Atlanta Declaration in our efforts towards enhancing global health and water provision. I also want to recognize the other sponsors, Coca-Cola, of course. Coca-Cola is a household name, not just here in Atlanta, but everywhere. If you have watched the movie, Gods Must Be Crazy, you will then realize the significance of Coca-Cola. The center, the World Affairs Council of Atlanta as well, we do recognize you, and as well as the Center for Strategic International Studies. We truly appreciate, and I want to tell you that we cannot take this moment for granted. Thank you for your invitation, Dr. Gill, for us to be able to be part of this wonderful summit, albeit briefly. I thank you.
Just before, and thanks again to the Kenyan delegation, before I turn it over to Steve, I just wanted to recognize the First Lady of Niger, who has now joined us in her delegation. We had the opportunity to spend some time together last week and really learned about her incredible commitment to these issues, to health, to education, to the environment in Niger. And we know right now they're facing an incredible challenge with the issue of drought and potential malnutrition. The impact is huge and growing, and so we really are pleased to have her and her delegation here to talk about some of the issues of partnership. And so just wanted to welcome you and thank you for being present today.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Steve Morrison from CSIS, and we're thrilled to be here today. I also want to welcome the 130 or 150 people who are with us online today, and I want to offer a special thanks to Wayne Lord and Helene Gale, our partners in this, very close friends and great partners in their organizations. I also want to offer a special thanks right now to Seth Gannon, who's a son of Atlanta and a CSIS staff person, who's put enormous work into this on our side at CSIS, Julia Nagel, who produced the beautiful video that we'll be viewing momentarily, Suzanne Brundage, who was instrumental in all that we've done, who's viewing from Chicago, and Carolyn Schroat, who is here with us. We're CSIS is a Washington-based 50-year-old think tank. Our core mission is really around international security and foreign policy, and it's quite interesting that over the last decade, we've carefully built up a pretty robust global health program, now among the largest programs at CSIS. Much of that has been on the strength of the trustees, Helene Gale, Bill Frist, Mukhtar Kent, Neville Isdell, our trustees at CSIS who have backed us in this effort. Also, our partnership with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been absolutely fundamental, and I'm very grateful to Cheryl Scott for joining us today from Seattle. We have put the primary focus of our work on U.S. leadership on global health and now water. We've put primary efforts on trying to sustain U.S. leadership and bring global health into mainstream foreign policy and national interest discussions and push for a long-term strategic outlook. We've done outreach and programs of this kind around the country, in Seattle, in the Bay Area, Research Triangle, New York, Boston, Minneapolis. And frankly, this session that we're doing today in Atlanta is among the most exciting and complicated and gratifying from our standpoint. We at CSIS feel very much tied to and part of Atlanta. Senator Nunn, an iconic personality from Georgia, is chairman of our board, as I mentioned, Helene Gale. is a CSIS trustee and longstanding friend. She co-chaired our Commission on a Strategic Approach to Global Health in 2009-2010. Lou Sullivan, Dr. Sullivan, has been a strong partner. He and Helene came with us back in 2004 to China to look at the impacts of the HIV/AIDS programs and the emerging strategy of the Chinese government. As I mentioned, Mukhtar Kent, Neville Isdale have been friends and strong trustees with us. We have developed over the years a very active and very fruitful relationship with CDC, with Dr. Frieden, with the Global Health Team, Kevin DeCock, Susan McClure, Don Schreiber, and we're very grateful for all of that support. Today we are going to see and issue a number of products to organize ourselves today. We have the Atlanta Declaration, which I'll say a few words about in a moment. This was put together by our three organizations in close consultation with a number of expert institutions here in Atlanta, as well as global health experts elsewhere. I'll say a few words about what's in that in a moment. We have a 9-minute video that's a companion to that that we will be viewing momentarily. There is a Atlanta Water Working Group document which you have in your package, which is a companion to the Atlanta Declaration. You'll hear more about that document. Peter Lockery and Brooks Keene were very instrumental in pulling that all together as a statement that represents the way forward in terms of the consortium or coalition of Atlantan-based organizations active in the water area. We also are very thrilled, really, today that we are able to be the occasion for the launch of a major national survey of American opinion on foreign aid and global health undertaken by the Kaiser Family Foundation. And we're joined today by the architects, the authors of that study, Molly Ann Brody and Liz Hamill. Thank you for being with us, who've come from Menlo Park, California. And today will be the release and the launch of that. And on the opinion panel later today, we will have that the results presented and a discussion organized around that. Across these are a number of arguments. One is, why are we meeting now? At this moment, and our view is that we're at a point now where we should really be thinking about the future, about the next Congress, the next administration. This is a period of significant promise, and there's a remarkable opportunity to do good. Thanks in large part to U.S. leadership, the past decade has seen enormous progress in controlling HIV/AIDS, malaria, maternal and child health, and building common global defenses against pandemic threats. We can build on that progress. We can cement partnerships with developing countries like Kenya and allow them to become truly self-reliant, and we can invest in safe water and better hygiene and sanitation, areas of neglect up to now. Why Atlanta? You'll see in the video and in the discussions, Atlanta is a global hub of leading health and development organizations with a legacy of struggle for civil rights and social justice. It's a place where we've seen very robust, innovative partnerships across government, business, universities, and the nonprofit sector that enhance lives. When it comes to informing the next administration and Congress of what can and should be done to promote U.S. global health interest in improving the world's health, Atlantans speak with authority. What is to be done? We try to address that in the declaration, in the video, in the companion piece on water. First is to remind Americans that making the world healthier is rooted in America's fundamental humanitarianism, and that better health makes for a safer and more secure world where communities can flourish and productivity can rise. Second, there are concrete actions that we point to that Congress and the administration can embrace. Investing in our partner countries to make them more self-reliant in public health skills, financial management, supply chains. In an era of austerity, there are smart investments which pay dividends down the line. We also need to work better with other organizations on problems that are too big for us to tackle alone. Stronger, better managed international organizations, the Global Fund to Fight HIV, TB, and Malaria, the Gavi Alliance, UNICEF, the World Health Organization, the World Bank. They are key to long-term success and shared global responsibility. We also emphasize that we need to get better in our diplomacy in enlisting emerging powers, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, and others, to bring their full potential to the table. Within their borders are millions of poor people who are underserved, and outside their borders are many as well. They have greater voice, expertise, financial resources, and leadership to help tackle these global problems. Finally, we need to integrate water, sanitation, and hygiene into our health approaches. That long overdue change will improve nutrition and food security, lower child mortality, and better control infectious disease. Today, we are able to stand together here in Atlanta to look beyond our differences and the many challenges we face at home and abroad. We're able really to celebrate what Atlanta represents, spotlight the historic achievements championed by Presidents Bush and Obama in the area of global health, and think strategically about the future gains U.S. leadership can bring. The video that we're putting together here that we're going to look at is a 9-minute video. It will be posted in many of the partner organization sites in the coming days. We're hoping to see the CARE and World Affairs Council help us. You'll see it on iTunes University, CSIS.org, smartglobalhealth.org, which is our special site for our global health program. We'll package all of the materials from today. That's smartglobalhealth.org/Atlanta. So you'll be able to see it. We're streaming it live today, and you should look and be able to feel confident that everything that we do today, we will do our best to try and reach as many multiple audiences as we possibly can, which is part of our strategy. Julia, if we could please cue up and begin the video. Thank you.
Atlanta is a special city. I've lived in many cities during my lifetime, many great cities, and have much to offer. But what makes this city different is the broad commitment of its citizens, its corporations, its institutions to bettering the lives of its citizens.
This is the home of the civil rights movement that clearly showed the world what it takes to pull diverse segments of a society together to further a goal. The Olympics that Atlanta held here, again, I think a shining example of how a city comes together around an important goal.
Everyone here feels that they have ownership in the city and are working to make it better, to address problems. All of these come together really in a unique way to make this an increasing center for global health.
Atlanta is full of international organizations such as the Carter Center and CARE and CDC.
But also, Atlanta is the home of more than 50 colleges and universities, many of which are very actively involved in public health and global health. Emory University, Morehouse College of Medicine, Georgia State University, Georgia Tech, University of Georgia are all involved in global health work.
Beyond that, we have to talk about the Coca-Cola Company. It is, of course, a legendary, iconic brand, but it has been involved very seriously in the field of public health for a long time.
Coca-Cola and Atlanta have always had a long-term partnership. We care deeply about the communities in which we operate and the communities that we serve. And Atlanta is a special place for us.
So I think what's, again, important about Atlanta is that we've demonstrated the value of partnerships. When you combine the expertise of these different institutions and have them working together, I think that's unique. That it's not just one university or one NGO working, but it's this partnership that's allowed us to make a significant contribution.
But Atlanta, again, has remarkable, remarkable institutional strength. And it's not just the city of Atlanta, but throughout Georgia, their strength.
In Georgia, we are truly a crossroads for much of the United States. We have the world's largest and busiest airport, which means we have a lot of people from a lot of different locations all around the globe who pass through our area. So we are a state, I think, that have to be concerned about global health.
So from an academic point of view, from a transportation point of view, and from a corporate point of view, we are really very involved every day in the health issues, not just in our region, but indeed around the globe.
U.S. government has been one of the most important country in terms of providing resources and helping to really create hope to millions of people.
Take immunizations for one.
The U.S. has been part of a global coalition that's increased infant vaccinations and saves 3 million lives every year and has more to save.
I think an area where the U.S. has provided a lot of leadership and has really made a big impact has been HIV/AIDS.
Well, if you look at the past decade, you can't look past any further than President Bush's PEPFAR initiative, the President's initiative to eradicate AIDS, a terrific program that's brought about great results.
Not only in the treatment of HIV/AIDS, but the coming to understanding transmission and how to provide interventions to really reduce levels of infection rates.
Because of PEPFAR, there are 4 million people today alive, walking around, learning, teaching, working, growing up healthy. And last year alone, 200,000 babies were born without HIV who would have had HIV if it weren't for PEPFAR.
The spotlight always goes to HIV/AIDS with the PEPFAR program, but there have been tremendous advances also in malaria, in tuberculosis, and in other areas such as child survival.
We've brought down death rates from certain diseases. Some diseases are on their way to being eliminated. River blindness, elephantiasis, blinding trachoma. These are huge advances that benefit millions and millions of people.
Global health is critically important because it's the right thing to do. It's what a great country like the U.S. does. And I wish the American people who wonder what their dollars are doing could come with me when I go to other countries and I see the enormous difference that we're making in people's lives.
The declaration was developed by three partners, the World Affairs Council of Atlanta, CARE, and CSIS. But in collaboration with other key stakeholders in the Atlanta communities.
We have put this declaration together in order to register the special assets that Atlanta brings to the whole question of U.S. leadership in global health, and to lay out a very succinct vision of what the next Congress and next administration should really be focused upon as the top line priorities in carrying forward U.S. leadership in global health, including in the water sector. And those break down into really four key points.
You have southern governments showing up and playing a major role, making major commitments that are already producing results. And that's very important because in the long run, they're the ones who are going to be providing the resources. They're the ones who are accountable to their citizens.
The emerging powers, China, India, South Africa, Brazil, these are countries which have within their borders large underserved poor populations where the health demands are acute. And that needs to be a bigger dimension of our diplomacy.
It's important that we have the different organizations involved, including the multilateral organizations.
And that is about investing in the Global Fund to fight HIV, TB, and malaria, investing in the Gavi Alliance. That's a way of bringing others in as part of a shared responsibility strategy.
The U.S. has always had a real preeminent role in global health efforts. One aspect, though, that I think has been missing is the integration of our water efforts into that.
The interconnected issues of water, sanitation, and hygiene ought to be a cornerstone of the United States foreign policy of a whole range of areas. Part is just the humanitarian. Half the people who are sick at any given time are sick needlessly from waterborne disease.
Water will continue to be one of the world's most pressing problems over this century. In the developing world, water-related disease claims about 5,000 children every single day. An estimated 320 million productive workdays are lost to illnesses from unsafe drinking water and lack of access to sanitation. Much of that burden is carried by girls and women.
The big challenges in water and sanitation and hygiene is sustainability and scale. And one way to overcome that is by integrating water and sanitation and hygiene with existing health programs.
Dollars are very precious in the United States right now. The more transparency to the benefits that are being derived from the use of American healthcare initiatives overseas, the better off we'll be able to continue to appropriate the funds necessary to make a difference in the lives of citizens around the world.
Bipartisanship or nonpartisanship is extremely important in terms of any issue that's going to last more than 5 to 10 years. We dare not lose it in the field of health because the world depends a lot on American leadership in the health field.
Now, we're fortunate in America. We have the largest budget and the largest budget of global health spending, thanks to bipartisan support from Republican and Democratic administrations.
I think we are very caring people, we're very generous people, we're very philanthropic people, but it goes beyond any of those things. It gets right down to the question of how do we protect our own citizens, and the way we help protect our own citizens is to recognize that the fight against infectious disease, the fight against the lack of water and impure water around the globe is important right here at home in the state of Georgia.
Atlanta is standing very tall in bringing its gifts to the issue of how to help the world solve its global health and development problems. So I see Atlanta as leading the way.
Much. That is very inspiring, representing a lot of the work that's been done for decades, but also a challenge for the work that has to be done in future years. For this summit, there could be no better person to deliver the keynote address than Senator Johnny Isaacson. Not only did he give us the initial idea and inspiration for this conference, but he and his staff have stayed engaged throughout the entire planning process and have helped us all the way through to bring this to fruition. But far more than that, Senator Isaacson, in his time in the Congress, has consistently been engaged in the area of global health and in water, as well as held important related leadership roles, including his position as ranking member of the Africa Subcommittee of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He has provided leadership and given strong support to specific bipartisan-supported legislation in the fields of public health and water, and has been a major advocate for the development of the Global Health Center of Excellence in the state of Georgia. Senator Isaacson had more than two decades as a leader in real estate business in Atlanta and in the Southeast, and as a civic and church leader as well. The senator served 17 years in the Georgia legislature and served 2 years as chairman of the Georgia Board of Education. In 1999, he was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives, where he served 3 terms before being elected to the U.S. Senate in 2004 and reelected in 2010. As a government affairs officer for a number of years in a major Georgia agribusiness company, it was my great privilege to work with the senator and his staff on a number of issues that are crucial to the state of Georgia, to the country, and to the world. In all of these experiences, it was clear to me and to all that work with us that Johnny Isaacson is not only the senator from Georgia, but is a genuine national leader and a statesman in the truest sense of that word, whose deep commitment to America's values, its security, and its global engagement is inspiring. After the senator's remarks, we will have time for some questions. We'll do that. There are 2 mics in the aisles here. If after his formal remarks, if you want to get in line, we'll have time for 4, 5, 6 questions, maybe more, depending on the time, but we look forward to those. And you can just line up after the formal remarks are over. Please state your name and who you are, and we hope that if you have a comment or a question that is also not a speech, that we, because of time, but the senator has graciously accepted our invitation to answer those questions, which he always does in meetings of this kind. So for the keynote address for this summit on sustaining America's leadership in global health and water, it is a great honor for me to present Senator Johnny Isaacson.
I don't know how it is in Nigeria, but they always brag about politicians before they speak there.
I'd like to welcome the First Lady of Niger for being here today, the Vice President of Kenya, the many distinguished groups in the room. Thank you, Wayne, for your kind introduction. Helene Gayle, thank you for the leadership you provide to CARE around the world, and it's been my pleasure to travel with you and work with you, and I appreciate very much what you do. To the World Affairs Council, to CSIS, the Center for Strategic International Studies, and obviously to CARE, thank you for hosting this important summit. You might ask yourself, why is this summit in Atlanta, Georgia? Well, the first thing to understand is Atlanta is a center when it comes to clean water and global health. In fact, as I told Jeff Copeland when he took me on my first tour of CDC, the first year I was elected to Congress, I said, you know, this is not just an Atlanta asset or a United States asset. CDC is the world's asset. It's the world's healthcare center. When you think about the heritage and history of the Clifton Corridor, where Robert Woodruff years ago decided we needed a great hospital and he gave the money that started and founded Emory University and its hospital, and then gave the land to the United States government to build the Center for Disease Control. And then we marketed the Clifton Corridor as a center for healthcare. And I took a trip, Helene doesn't know this, I took a trip to New York City when we were recruiting CARE to leave from New York City and come to Atlanta, Georgia. And they located in the Clifton Corridor. And if you go up and down the Clifton Corridor and you go around the state of Georgia, you recognize we are a center of global health. From our great universities like Georgia State, Georgia Tech, the University of Georgia, the Morehouse School of Medicine, all those that create so much investment, Georgia Tech and the others, the Atlanta University Complex, and the Georgia Research Alliance, we are a city centered on research, development, looking for the cures and the breakthroughs that make the world a better place to live. So when you ask it, why Atlanta, it's obvious this summit and this declaration ought to be here today because Atlanta has been the city for so long of the world's healthcare. But you also might ask, why global health and why water? We have good health in America. We have clean water. Why do we have to worry about global health and global water? Well, if you ever read Tom Friedman's book about the internet and the world is flat, well, germs also recognize the world is flat. They don't recognize oceans. They don't recognize mountains, and they travel. AIDS came to America, brought here on a transcontinental flight from South Africa to New York City, carried by a flight attendant. So it's global health is important to every single American because what can start here can go to Kenya. What can start in Kenya can come to America. And it's important that we be a leader in finding those cures and doing those things necessary to extend life and maintaining prosperity because there's nothing worse than a contagion out of control or a country that can't respond. How thankful am I for CDC? Well, that few days after 9/11, when anthrax envelopes started coming to the Capitol, I was awfully glad CDC was already at work, and in a matter of a few days, not only traced the anthrax, but traced its source, and probably saved the lives of countless hundreds of people, and aides and workers, and maybe even United States senators in Washington, D.C. That's why global health is important. Why is clean water important? Because without clean water, you're not going to have global health. They are interrelated. They're inextricably tied, and it's critical to recognize that they are inextricably tied. But there's another important reason to understand why focusing on global health and focusing on health care is so important. You know, my father taught me and my mother that the more you give, the more you receive. America is a generous benefactor to the world and has been over many, many decades and many centuries. But we now face a time where we have growing needs and restricted resources. The investments we make, whether it's in global health or whether it's in clean water, are going to have to be measured based on cost, but also based on benefit to the American taxpayer. But it's important that we be a leader to bring about the collaboration, the partnerships, and the interrelationship of people and governments and countries so we together work to find the cures for disease and together make sure we have clean water. Neville Isdell, the great past president of the Coca-Cola Company, created a great phrase, connected capitalism. That's what's so important about this summit and this focus that we have today. If we can connect our capitalism in this country with the problems of the world and bring about solutions, we create customers who live longer lives, have better lives, whose standard of living goes up and their ability to consume goes up. I was talking to the gentleman here today from Procter & Gamble about expanding business and expanding market share, and he talked about expanding market share in Africa. You talk about the Coca-Cola Company, they have a mature market share in the United States. I'm sure that Muhtar Kent would say we got some more we can get, but they're pretty mature. Where are they going to expand their market share? In India, and in Africa and in Asia. That's where they're going to do it. And they want a healthier Africa to consume Coca-Cola. UPS, I travel with UPS to Uganda. The logistics that they provide to care, to see to it that food, health care, and services get to the needy of the world are unbelievable. And that's a charitable gift, but there's a payback. Because there's an expansion for UPS one day in Africa and other places around the world as they expand their great business that they contribute to us in Atlanta. So it's important economically to our country, not because we're greedy and because we want more business, but because we're caring and we know the benefit of caring is a healthier world, cleaner water, and in return, more consumers buying American products and interrelating with our country. Now, I've had the privilege to travel a lot in my job as United States Senator. And I have viewed a lot of great partnerships between CDC, between America, between CARE, between our government and other countries and other places. And it's going to take all hands on deck to meet our challenge of better global health and cleaner global water. But let me talk to you about some examples of the partnership I'm talking about, where we have leveraged United States tax dollars, leveraged those dollars with faith-based organizations, private organizations, not-for-profit organizations, to bring about better health care. I traveled with CARE to Uganda recently. In fact, I went with CARE 10 years ago to Egypt and Ethiopia. I've seen them in action around the world. One of our biggest health needs is a better standard of living for people around the world. Because, you know, healthier people are people whose standard of living is better. And when you travel to Gulu in northern Uganda in Africa, and you look around at the mud huts, the lack of clean water, you wonder how the people live. But there's CARE. Through a partnership and work with United States taxpayers and the government of Uganda, installed a village savings and loan in Gulu. What is a village savings and loan? It's where the women of the village gather together. They're supplied a strong box, just like the old ones we used to see in the Wild West. The strong box is where each woman puts their family savings in the box. Each of them have a passbook savings account, just like the one I had at R.L. Hope Elementary School at the corner of Peachtree and Piedmont way long time ago. Where they record their dollar or $5 deposit. And they sit in council and they decide whose business they're going to invest in and to whom in the village they're going to loan money. And they loan money to one woman who makes beads and sells them to Bloomingdale's in New York, to another who makes baskets for Bloomingdale's in New York, to another who does batik that they sell at the Global Mama's shop in Ghana. All these women now employed because the village put its savings together, made micro loans to micro businesses that began to develop and improve their standard of living, and pay back the loan with interest to be distributed among those who made the deposit. That may seem basic to you, but in a village where everybody lives in a mud hut, where there is no clean water, where there is no General Motors or major employer, where there is no Coca-Cola bottling plant, it's a step forward in their life and their quality of life. It's a move forward that may just one day teach them the principles we learned in America about free enterprise, risk, and entrepreneurship. And it's like the biblical teaching, you give them a fish, you feed them for a day. You teach them to fish and you feed them for a lifetime. And that's what CARE is doing with United States tax dollars, creating consumers. That is connected capitalism. That's the right investment of foreign relations money. And it's the right payback to the American taxpayer because more consumers for their products is a better lifestyle for their family as well. And faith-based organizations like the Catholic Church. I know I'm sorry the Vice President of Kenya has gone, but I want to, I think Mr. Otembo may still be here, one of his aides. Tell him I bragged about him, because when I went to Kenya, to speak, by the way, at the National Prayer Breakfast of Kenya, when President Kagame from Rwanda spoke, I had the privilege of going to the New Abani Orphanage in Kenya, a Catholic orphanage founded by Father Di Cristino. An orphanage that has at the back of the orphanage a cemetery where they bury the dead children who come there after their mothers have died from AIDS. But they haven't had a burial in a couple of years. You know why not? Because of PEPFAR and retrovirals, the mothers, although infected with AIDS, don't pass it on to the child. And so now it's gone from an orphanage where children went to die and be buried to an orphanage where they go to school. They learn to develop and get a continuum of care. Their mother may die, and probably does, but they live a prosperous life. Why? Because of the retrovirals, because of PEPFAR, and because of the partnership that we have with the Catholic Church at New Abani in Kenya. Or talk about what Ambassador Mark Green did in Tanzania, and this is a very important story. You saw when you looked at the goals of this project in the Atlanta Declaration, the first goal was to create self-reliance in those countries that we give benefits to so they can take over the responsibility that originally we pay for. Tanzania could be no better example. They got a lot of PEPFAR money. But Ambassador Green from the United States told the Tanzanian government there has to be a payback. You have to train the people to do the testing to identify HIV. And you have to help us in distributing the retrovirals. One day your country should distribute the retrovirals, do the testing, and do the lab work, and we'll supply the retrovirals. That's what happens in Tanzania now. Our cost of delivery has gone down because they have taken over self-reliantly more of the responsibility in their country. And each and every country needs to understand the same thing. It's like the principles of the Millennium Challenge Corporation, which the Bush administration started, which has been a great investment in the continent of Africa. But with MCC investments come responsibilities. African countries that get the grants have to agree to reduce corruption, which is a major problem in the country, have a democratic, more democratic form of government in operation, set goals realistic to be achieved, and if they don't, there's no second chance on MCC investment. And so there is the incentive that you and I as business people have. That is, if you play by the rules, if you do it right, if you improve yourself, there's a second chance at bat, whether it's for a loan or whether it's an equity investment by a partner. It's very important that we understand that all of these partnerships make a huge difference. Now let me talk for a second about water, tell you a great story about Adesio, Ghana. I had the privilege of going to Accra, Ghana not too long ago, a year and a half ago, and went to an MCC, Millennium Challenge Corporation investment in a 1 acre size chiller where the pineapples now grown in Ghana go into a chiller and had their lifetimes expanded and they can be exported and they can be sold on the continent and gone to Europe. It's been a great investment for the people of Ghana. It's been great for me. I love pineapple. And it was great for the Millennium Challenge Corporation because it's a great payback for the United States. But on the way back from the pineapple consortium of 16 plantations that all contribute to this great 1 acre size chiller, I stopped in Adesso, which is a suburb about 39 to 40 kilometers out of Accra, Ghana, and went to this little village and watched a miracle brought about by World Health Resources, Water Health International, who is here today, by the way, and the Coca-Cola Company is here today. A partnership where they took the dirtiest, nastiest, ugliest water I have ever seen anywhere, put it through a patented system of filtration with ultimate ultraviolet ray treatment to come out an effluent at the other side, perfectly clean, healthy water. And the great thing about that water is they sell it to the people in the village. They don't give it to them. They pay 7 cents a day for 5 gallons. Why? Because 7 cents a day per consumer in that village is enough capital to be used and saved to operate the plant, to refurbish the plant, to take that part that wears out and to replace it. So we're not just giving them clean water for a day because of the goodness of our heart, because of the biblical admonition to teach a man to fish. We're giving them the ability to run that plant for years to come for their children and their grandchildren. Water Health International and Coca-Cola are doing a great investment. The only anticipated return is more customers to drink Coca-Cola and more sales of packages for plants by Water Health International. In fact, I have to tell you, when I was so impressed, I got to tell you one last thing. They said, we want you to taste the water, the chief of the village. And I took a look at that nasty water that had gone in. And it looked clean coming out, but I think I had to risk myself, 6,000 miles away from home. But they brought a Coca-Cola paper cup out, which was a dead ringer for me. And they turned on that effluent at the end of that package plan. They said, here, Senator Isaacs, and taste it. And I said, God, please let this be good water. And I took a drink of it. And it was great, and I was so impressed that when I got back to the United States, I have a place up on Lake Raven in North Georgia with a well. I bought a UV facility to treat the water that comes out of that well just because I want to make sure my little grandchildren who go to that lake place always have the cleanest water possible. So not only do the people of Adesio near Accra, Ghana have clean water now, they have a water plant that will last them a lifetime, and I've got one at my place in North Georgia because I learned from the example of Water Health International and the Coca-Cola Company. I could go on and on telling stories. Politicians can always do that. But we have a time of growing challenges and diminishing resources in this country. And every investment the United States makes of your tax dollar should have an anticipated return and a payback to the taxpayers of America. I will submit to you that a world free of AIDS, children free of measles, a world where there is no tetanus or where there is no polio is a world that we benefit from if our tax dollars go to make that investment. And a CDC that is there ready and poised for the next contagion, whatever it may be, none of us know, is important for our health and for our future, and it's an investment that has a payback. And if clean water brings about less disease, which it does, and more expansion and more uplifting economic development in other countries, then investing in water and good health has a payback to the American taxpayer. But as you talk today and as your speakers, listen to your speakers, understand this message from me loud and clear. We cannot let tax dollars just follow compassion. They have to follow results. And we have to design our compassionate programs to produce the results to benefit the American people. CARE's doing it. Koch's doing it. UPS is doing it. All of us together can do it. Because when you command and demand results, you will get them. And in the end, we will all be better off. We'll have more consumers, better partners, and America will be what it has always been, the leader of the free world and hope. As Colin Powell said to the UN, a number right before the surge in Iraq, and this is, you might think this is off the subject, but I think it's right on the subject. America is the greatest land on the face of this earth. It sends its sons and daughters around the world to improve the world, and if called upon, sends its sons and daughters around the world to defend freedom and peace and liberty, whether in Europe, whether in South Korea, wherever it might be. And when we leave, we only ask for a few acres of land to bury our dead. That is the greatness of this country. We want everybody to share in the wealth of democracy that we enjoy, and we want to be a catalyst for that democracy through the investments we make in CDC, in clean water, and other benefits the American taxpayers fund. So remember this, at a time of diminishing resources, but a time of growing challenges, it is important for us to ensure that the guarantee of the American taxpayer is the payback on the investment not just benefits those to whom we invest, but it benefits our country and our taxpayer as well. And I thank you for honoring me to be here today. Yeah, wonderful.
We've got a few minutes for questions, so I'd like to, for you to come to one of the mics, identify yourself, and direct your question. Thank you.
Good morning, Senator Isaacson. Thanks so much for being here. On a personal note, I just want to thank you for being my senator. I greatly appreciate the work that you do in the Foreign Relations Committee.
Thank you for being my constituent.
On a professional note, I teach at Kennesaw State University, and I have the opportunity to teach 18-year-olds coming into college about these global issues. And it occurs to me that if we're really going to make a significant difference in these issues, we need to go beyond the incredible universities that we have in the city of Atlanta and look at the universities throughout the state of Georgia. So I was wondering if you could speak to how we take the Atlanta Summit and the Atlanta Declaration and make it a Georgia Declaration so that we teach the emerging leaders at Kennesaw State and at North Georgia College and at Columbus State and at Georgia Southern, that they too are engaged global citizens and they too have a role to play in this process. Thank you.
Well, the first thing I would do, thank you for the question and thank you for what you do at Kennesaw State. The first thing I would do is I'll call Hank Huckabee and ask him to call you and take you to the next meeting of the Board of Regents because we'll make that happen because when our regents get together at our 34 units of the university system, although they're primarily worried about diminishing resources and where to get the money they need to run the university, they also talk about things like a system-wide vision. And I think this type of topics like we've talked about today and what the universities in the Metro Atlanta have really joined in to do is something that ought to be spread around the state and throughout all 34 units of the university system. And we have some of our four-year universities and colleges in rural Georgia, North, South, and South Georgia that have some pretty good international programs already. That's becoming very popular. So I'll make sure Hank Huckabee gets the message, and we'll see if we can't get that presentation set up. Yes.
Good morning, Senator Isaacson. I'm Benita Dodd with the Georgia Public Policy Foundation, and I am also a native of South Africa, so I just love hearing everything about the promise in South Africa. My question to you is about the issue of corporate investment and privatization in water infrastructure in the third world countries especially. A lot of the time that is demonized as corporate greed, and we do know that prices tend to go up when corporate investors go into third world countries. How do you preserve the ability of citizens of these countries to obtain water and the right of such corporate investors to expedite infrastructure and get the profit that they need to continue?
Well, if I thank you, Benita, for the question. I go back to Ghana and the project that I saw with Water Health International and Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola's vested interest are more consumers and better water to make Coca-Cola with, I'm sure. And Water Health International, if you go to their website and look at what they're doing around the world in India, the Philippines, and Africa, with a new technique that really does deliver the purest water possible with the use of ultraviolet light, I think their goals are noble. Like everybody, if they're in business, whether they're a not-for-profit or whether they're for-profit, they hope is the consumers like their product, use their product, and it has a payback to it. But there's nothing wrong with capitalism. In fact, a little more capitalism in some of these places around the world, we'd have a whole lot better world right now than some of the places that are controlled or dictated totally by their governments. So, and in terms of corporate greed, you know, I guess there's corporate greed everywhere, and you don't know where it is, but you know it when you see it. And if it's there and you see it, then we shouldn't be fostering it through our foreign relations investments or foreign affairs investments that we make in terms of foreign aid. But where there is, and that's part of the accountability we have to have at the United States government level. And I'm proud to tell you that your Senate Foreign Relations Committee and your Foreign Affairs Committee in the House do a lot of accountability meetings. We had one last week just on the World Food Program with the UN to make sure U.S. tax dollars that are used are used efficiently and actually get the food to the mouths of those in need. So I think accountability is something that must be expected and demanded. I'm talking too long here, but as I'm talking, I'm thinking of other examples. What I said about Millennium Challenge Corporation, I mean, we make great investments in these, like the port at Cotonou in Benin or the pineapple refrigerator in Ghana. But in return for those investments, there's absolute accountability, and the result of no accountability is no more money, which is the best motivator you can possibly find. So I think we do a good job in foreign affairs and of making sure there's an accountability for the money that's invested, and we've got to continue to do more of that.
Hi, Senator. My name is Damaso Mfumi, and I have my undergrad from Kennesaw State University, so it's a really good school. And I am currently a full-time executive MBA at Purdue University. I really don't understand. Ever since I was born, I noticed that Africa keep getting aid. We keep receiving aid, and nothing changes. African leaders live at large on multi-millions budget annually, or let's say annually, and yet, you have to go all the way from the United States to Africa to give us clean water. Is that really sustainable? And my last question to you is, instead of repealing the healthcare bill, can you work objectively to make it better? If you do so, I'll vote for you this year.
I want to make sure I heard the whole question. I heard the question about sustainability of the clean water, but what was the other part?
The other part was the healthcare bill. That instead of repealing it, can you make it better?
The Affordable Care Act? Okay. Well, that's a long question. Well, let me do the water part first.
It's like they say in the old church thing, John, they're starting to meddle now.
Yeah, I think it's about time to go. No, I'm just kidding. On the sustainability of water, and that's a great question because I know Africa has had experiences with people coming, offering them something, they leave, and it's not sustainable. What I mentioned in terms of what Coca-Cola and Water Health International are doing is very sustainable. In fact, they're doing it in such a way they're teaching the people the discipline of actually paying for the benefit of the clean water. So when they leave, the money, the people are used to paying the money necessary to manage and maintain and refurbish the plant as it depreciates. So that's the best form of sustainability possible. Now, in terms of the Affordable Health Care Act, let me just say this. We don't know what decision the Supreme Court has made. They've made the decision. They just hadn't told us yet. We'll probably find out the fourth week of June, around the 23rd of June. And I'm not a mind reader. My wife does that well, but I don't do that at all. So I don't really know. But whatever decision they make, we have some significant challenges in healthcare in the United States. And quite frankly, since the Affordable Care Bill passed, we have learned a lot of challenges that we have because of the Affordable Health Care Bill, which is why we've had so many waivers issued by the administration and CMS, et cetera. So rather than get into a political discussion on the health care bill, let's just say this. I personally believe as much private competition in healthcare, both from the provider standpoint as well as the insurer standpoint, gives us a better health care system than a single-payer government system. That's my personal feeling. And I don't know how Medicare is going to come out, but Medicare has got to be reformed before 2017 or it goes broke. And part of that reform, I think, needs to be us getting out of the fee-for-service business reimbursement and instead doing premium support based on a means test. I think that, now this is getting very detailed, and I apologize, but it's a complicated issue and it's a complicated problem. We have a big challenge before us, and whatever the court says, I imagine it's going to make a split decision. That would be my guess. And that's going to force us to go back as a legislative body to work with the next administration to get the best possible health care plan for the people of the United States of America. And that's what I intend to commit myself to. That's the best I could do.
Yes. Senator Isaacson, thank you for your leadership. My name is Omar Latouf. I'm a professor at Emory University, and I'm here on the request of the American College of Cardiology. As you are addressing global health, an absolutely important issue, I wish to bring to your attention an epidemic that is lurking here in Atlanta, in our state, in our nation, and around the globe, and that is cardiometabolic syndrome or obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, and elevated cholesterol. If you take a look at our state, patients who have those collective diseases cost our state in 2010 $25 billion in hospital and related treatment. There were over 800,000 patients who were discharged from hospitals in 2010 with diagnoses related to this issue. So I plead to you to include those issues in your very important topic of global health. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Doctor. And you bring up a great, great point. Over 50% of the cost of Medicare is directly or indirectly hypertension and diabetes, both of which are substantially preventable if we can get people from being obese, get people to eat better, get people to exercise. So as we work around the world, as Dr. Frieden and CDC work, part of their mission around the world is better health habits in terms of eating and in terms of exercise and in terms of paying attention to weight and things like that. You know, I'm 67 years old. All the bad habits I had 35 years ago, I can't do a thing about. And whatever the results of them are going to be, I'm going to have to deal with them. But for my grandchildren and my children, the better they can eat, the better they can exercise, the more we can point out the benefits of living a healthy life, the lower the cost in out years in terms of Medicare. So it's got to be a global health issue as well as a United States issue, and it's the single biggest contributor to the rapid growth of the cost of Medicare. I talk about wellness all the time because wellness is a lot better than managing disease and a lot less expensive, and that's what we need to focus on. Thank you for what you do, Doctor. Yes.
Senator Isaacson, I'm Lisa Parsons. I'm from the Global Health and Humanitarian Summit. And I just wanted, I really like what you're saying about accountability, and I would also like to know your take on what the industry and what we as Americans do abroad, how we make ourselves accountable to the harm that we do sometimes, just like with Coca-Cola and osteoporosis or some of those issues. How do you see that being our accountability as well?
With
women's health, there's a good study that showed over a certain time period that even one soda a day, there was a large increase in osteoporosis in women. There are several other things that we've done that we find that we increase health risk factors abroad. So I just, as a taxpayer, I would also like to be responsible for if we have consequences. How do we make accountable both the top end and the bottom end? I think both need to be included in that.
Well, you know, my experience with American business is that it is very responsible in those points. You know, on the soft drink issue, and Dr. Frieden and I have had some great conversations about this. You know, which came first, Robert Woodruff or Emory University? Well, Robert Woodruff did, and then came after that CDC, and he was a benefactor of the Coca-Cola business, and he would have been the first person to tell you what Neville Isdell and what Muhtar Kent will tell you now, and that is any product in excess is bad for you, whether it's whiskey, whether it's any type of food or anything else. Moderation is what we should teach. So I wouldn't blame the Coca-Cola company a disease that might be in part because of obesity or because of sugar or because of carbonation or because of something like that, because generally speaking, and I'm a lot of things, but I'm not a physician, so I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think in moderation, any product like that is fine. And my experience with Coca-Cola, and I'm not shilling for them, by the way, but my experience, and as chairman of the State Board of Education, we went through a huge battle over soft drinks in schools. We went over a huge battle over Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola and people like that paying for scoreboards and paying for all these things to get their logo up when kids were drinking too much soft drinks and things like that. And they have been a great corporate citizen in responding to that by reducing those programs and even managing the time at which that exposure is even available in the public schools today. So, you know, I'm not, like I say, I'm not shilling for them, but I think part of the responsibility of every corporation in America that sells to its consumers is for the consumers to understand the risk and how to best use the product. And that means moderation in terms of sugar products and things like that. And I believe Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, to the best I know, is a very good corporate citizen and holds itself responsible for that type of consumption. And I know I'm finished now. So let me just close by saying, unfortunately, I have to go back to Washington and can't stay all day, but I commend all of you for coming. I thank Helene on her leadership, CSIS, the World Affairs Council, CARE, just very much for this program. It's meaningful to our state. It's meaningful to our world, and I appreciate you all for paying attention today. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. We'll proceed right on with the next panel led by Dr. Marson.